The Navigators is an international, interdenominational Christian organization whose objective is to help fulfill Christ's commission to make disciples of all nations. They individually teach the basics of the Christian life to new believers, who then teach others. They work on campuses, military bases, and among lay men and women on every continent.
Do you remember your first creation? Maybe it was a finger painting you brought home from pre-nursery school, or maybe it was a May basket you made in the first grade. Maybe you started a little earlier, like my two older girls did, who when they were 2.5 and 3.5, got up early one Sunday morning, decided to bake a coffee cake for Mommy and Daddy. I see some of you have done this too. Their culinary creation turned out to be 1/2 sugar, 1/4 flour, 1/4 water, with a little decorating sugar on top. But they were very proud when they brought in their object de art after baking it in a cold oven for 2 minutes. Creativity is one of the first drives we attempt to fulfill. From our first mud pie to our first souffle, we feel great satisfaction when we complete our first dress or when we have prepared a lovely meal. Learning Japanese brush painting or ikebana brings a sense of contentment. And we take pleasure in the evidence of creativity in our children. We all feel that when they bring their first watercolor that we're sure they're going to be another Renoir or the unbelievably real turtle that Susie modeled certainly means she's going to take her place among the great sculptures of the world. How often, when we're depressed or we are going through a difficult experience, we feel a need to do something, to create something. I find that even cleaning the house with determination and vigor satisfies me. This is just an urge to bring good out of chaos. Oh, I didn't mean it that way. We are trying to bring some sense into disturbed or disrupted circumstances. And it is our creative instincts that sometimes save us from despair and the feeling that it's hopeless. It's this desire, this need to create something good, make something good, to beautiful, to offset the unlovely. Some of the most moving pieces of music have been written out of deep sorrow. And masterpieces of art are often just an expression of a tormented soul. We were fortunate, as Virginia mentioned, I think, to live overseas. As she also mentioned, we lived in a little village outside of Beirut, and we were the only foreigners in that village, so tried to live as much as possible like the people. So our children's first games were games played with old tin cans or elastic or boxes or any other junk they happened to find lying around the village. But it seems to me that this has developed in them creative instincts more than if we had been here where we could buy everything. That's why I say we were fortunate. Our affluent life in America seems to preclude our being as creative as we could be. Some of the little boxes of art that we buy at Pier 1 or some of these other stores, even those are already kind of half done for us. This is good, and I think it's something we should be doing. One practice we brought back with us, and I'm sure some of you do too, is to make our own greeting cards. Well, each one of us express our creativity in some way, tending a rose garden, maybe just creating an atmosphere of creativity around the house, or perhaps you express your creativity in intellectual pursuits. Whatever we do, we are expressing something that is inherent in a human nature. It is an integral part of being a person. This is the way God made us. Do you ever wonder what it means to be created in the image of God? We all learned this in Sunday school. And most of us conjure up a picture of some being with head, arms, legs, like us. But I'd like to just throw out a little question and let you mull it over in your spare time. When God decided to come to earth, he said, I will take the form of man. Does this suggest that he had to become something other than he was in order to become like us? Well, it's something to think about. You can, as you ponder your theological problems, you can ponder that one. There are similarities we share with God. One is that we have a free will. God did not create us as robots, destined only to do what he ordered. He created us like himself with the power to say yes or no. Another likeness to God is our need to be loved and to love. God is love. And we learn at a very early age that love is one of the keys to a happy life. Being creative is, to me, another proof that God made us in a form like himself. The first thing we read about God is that he created. This picture of God the Creator drawn for us in the first few chapters of the Bible continues throughout the whole Bible as we read of his interaction with man. How loving of God to implant this same nature within us. In a humble and limited sense, he made us like little gods, able to create. Some of you may be thinking about this time, but I'm not creative. Mrs. So-and-so is naturally gifted and talented. You may look with envy at Mrs. Jones' paper flowers, or you may feel that you're all thumbs when it comes to sewing or knitting. This may lead you to further question, is this fair? Are not then the more creative, talented people thus more fulfilled and contented in life? Well, this is a fair question, and perhaps as we probe some of the implications, we can learn what it means to live creatively. Mortimer Adler, a contemporary philosopher, in his book on the meaning of life, answers a question that was put to him along this line, and he says, human creativity consists of man's power to bring things into existence that have not existed before, houses, pottery, dresses, paintings, flower arrangements, sculptures, beautiful salads. Creativity means originative power in all realms of human activity, and creativity is a power enjoyed by all women to a greater or lesser degree. Linda, my daughter, is 11. She is still fun to sew for because she doesn't have the definite taste that her two older teenage daughters have. However, Linda has a girlfriend, Terry. Terry's mother also sews. But Terry's mother can whip up out of leftover materials a stunning creation, original. I have to stick to McCall's. I made Linda's Easter outfit, and I'm sure that Terry's mother made hers, too. I haven't heard yet, although Linda does report regularly when Terry has a new dress. And how cute Terry's new dress is. However, she is a child at heart, and there are no overtones of comparison or left-handed hints that could I have one, too. So I have to accept these reports just as guilelessly as she gives them. But the fact that Terry's mother can create a beautiful dress out of nothing, and I have to follow McCall's implicitly, doesn't mean that I am any less fulfilled. My composition as a person doesn't require the same amount of accomplishment that Terry's mother needs to have. And so when I finish a dress, I am satisfied, although I know I need to keep improving and learn all I can. But the point is, what I'm doing is fulfilling my creative instincts, and how it comes out will be different in each person. There probably is a correlation between living creatively and living contentedly and a fulfilled life. And if this is true, we probably should investigate how to live more creatively. And I think we should remember it as we are training our children. There's quite a bit written today about creativity, and many of our educators feel that our school system is sadly neglecting this part of the children's development. There's a book called Sourcebook for Creative Thinking, and out of this book I've gleaned some thoughts that I thought I would share with you as mothers that might be helpful, just as guidelines as you are raising your children. I chose only two out of many, and I chose these two because I felt they were basic. And they are psychological freedom and psychological safety. Psychological safety includes accepting an individual unconditionally, regarding her as worthwhile no matter what she is. It also includes a need to be in an atmosphere where external evaluation is absent. External evaluation is always a threat and creates a need for defensiveness. Psychological safety also means that you are understood empathetically, not I like you or I accept you because I don't know you, but I accept you because I know you and I understand you just as you are. Psychological freedom guarantees that we are given complete freedom to be, to feel, to express just as we are. It gives us freedom to be afraid of a new venture or eager for a new venture. It gives us freedom to bear consequences of mistakes as well as consequences of achievements. We can sum this all up by saying that one needs freedom to be creative. This is part of what Dr. Spock was trying to say a few years back, and now he's being blamed for all of our juvenile delinquency. This is also the philosophy behind the establishment of schools like Summerhill. I'd better say here parenthetically, so I won't be misquoted, that there are many arguments, of course, against this. But this is a truth. There is truth here that in order to be creative, we need freedom. The problem is that truth, always in the hands of humans, becomes distorted, unbalanced, and misused. I can see the positive and negative results of this philosophy in my own family. We have tried to give our children freedom, and there are times when they misuse it, or it leads them into situations that would otherwise be averted. Or, for instance, our most creative freed child questions everything, and she questions our beliefs about Christianity, which is a bit disappointing from a human point of view. But I know that when she finally sorts out all her questions and probes all the answers possible, the convictions will be her own. And in the meantime, we continue to give her freedom with our point of view put in here and there, and then trust God that He will reveal truth to her in the way that only He knows she will receive it. I don't know. The challenge and responsibility we have as mothers to develop creative children draws out every ounce of creativity within us. I'm constantly amazed at the liberated women who say that being a homemaker is not challenging enough or fulfilling enough. Well, to be creative, we need freedom. Channels of expression are blocked by many things: inferior feelings, anxieties, guilt, lack of confidence. One cannot create something beautiful if he feels ugly inside. We cannot be creative if we are inhibited. I could at this point try to attack this problem from the outside. I could give you a long list of books on how to be creative, or I could encourage you to investigate the more than 30 courses offered just at the YMCA alone that provide you with creative outlets, but you're probably in many of those classes already. So instead, I would like to introduce you to a second kind of creativity. Adler, the philosopher whom we quoted before, also said that there are two kinds of creativity, human and divine. We've been thinking only about the human creativity, which we've decided is inherent in each one of us, delights us in varying measures throughout our lives, and is probably bottled up and stifled in many of us. We've been thinking about the ways in which we produce creations in our little circle, but I'd like to suggest to you that there's an even more poignant, stimulating, energizing creativity that should be going on in each one of our lives. And this is the divine creativity that God accomplishes in us. Yes, God creating in you and me as women, mothers, wives. God, as we said, made us in His image, creative beings. God is the drive and purpose behind our need to be creative. But He didn't mean for us to use these powers for ourselves alone. He meant for us to continue to be related to Him, to make decisions that would please Him, to live for Him, honor Him. But somewhere in the beginning of mankind, we decided we did not want to do what God had planned. We exercised this free will that God had given to us and said, no, I'm not going to obey God. We used our creative powers and created our own little world for our own pleasures and pursuits. We alienated ourselves from God, and the results of this are all too clearly seen in the world today. From Watergate to tax evasion, power plays between nations, right down to envy of our neighbors, impatience with our children, or divorces outnumbering marriages in many cities, as we heard last month. These are all fruits of mankind living with no regard to God. God did not create us to this end. It's not His will nor His fault that we are where we are today. Well, what is His will? Why did He create us? In the book of Isaiah, back in the Old Testament, God says, to whom will you compare me that I should be like him? Lift up your eyes on high and see who created these things. At night, he brings out those stars, and he knows every one of them by name. John, who wrote the very last book in the Bible, has this to say, worthy art thou, our Lord and God, to receive glory and honor and power, for thou didst create all things, and by thy will they existed and were created. Back to Isaiah, God brings this claim to creation right down to you and me, and he says, everyone who is called by my name, whom I have created for my glory, whom I formed and made. These are only three of the many times in this book that God clearly tells us his purpose in creating us. The reason is that he would be honored and glorified. And we were told in Revelation that he is worthy to be honored and glorified because he made us in the first place. He created this all anyway. But we also discovered that very early in our beginnings, we chose not to follow his way. So we're not the beautiful, loving creatures that he intended. We have deliberately turned away from honoring God. We have chosen to live for ourselves rather than God. We have used, or should I say misused, the gifts that God gave us, the gifts of creativity to design and decide our own destiny. And it's because of this choice that we are never completely fulfilled. We never quite grasp the true meaning of life. And we keep wandering from one pursuit to another, trying to find peace and contentment. We do not use a sewing machine to mix up a cake or electric curlers to make waffles. And we cannot use material creations for purposes other than they were intended. And just as truly, we cannot use our bodies, souls, and spirits for uses other than what God intended. Not use them anyway and function properly. But we try and we fail and things don't go right and we don't understand why. This is where divine creativity comes in. God still loves us in spite of our sin and disobedience, turning away from Him. And He's reached out to us again and He's made it possible for us to live the kind of life He intended in the first place. He reached out to us by becoming like us. He came down here, actually lived as a man. And then he further showed his love and concern for us and his hate for sin by dying for us. Now, the death of Jesus does not mean so much to God. There have been many a good man through history who have willingly given up their lives for a good cause. But God died for two reasons, well, others, but two I'd like to share with you. He wanted to demonstrate to us in a way we would understand. He wanted to communicate to us. The most important thing to us is life. The thing we fear most is death. So God did the thing that we feared most. He said, I love you enough to die for you. And then also in dying, God in his plan, which we don't understand, but he chose to take all of this sin and disobedience and once and for all, nail it, as it were, as a symbol to the cross. And so our sins died with him. Well, this was very loving of God to make this provision, a very easy way for us. And you know, it's easier than the way he planned in the beginning, because now we have God's Spirit within us. And it's easier to follow God when his Spirit and his life is within us. But again, God lets us exercise our free will. He will not force anyone to obey him or love him. He gives us an opportunity to make a decision. Will we accept the way God provided, or will we intellectualize, debate? Will we use our creative powers and design new and better ways to reach God, perhaps by doing beautiful things, by good works? This is not what God asks. He asks that we take him back into our lives, that we let his Spirit live within us, that we give him the place of honor that he should have. When we do this, another wonderful miracle of creation takes place. I cannot explain how any more than scientists can explain how life originally started. But I, along with thousands of ladies, can tell and will tell all who will listen that God does enter a life. One of the ways the Bible expresses this phenomena is found in 2 Corinthians 5:17. Therefore, if any man be in Christ, he is a new creation. Old things have passed away. Behold, all things have become new. In the book of Ephesians, another letter written by Paul to a group of people living in Ephesus, he says, we are created in Christ Jesus for good works. And again in this book, we are told to put on the new nature created after the likeness of God in true righteousness and holiness. Another book in the New Testament is a book called Colossians. And here we read that we are to put on the new nature which is being renewed in knowledge after the image of its creator. Well, here we are right back where we started. God made us in his image, but we got away from it. But God now has made it possible for us to have a new nature. We can be a new creation. We can be like God. The psychologist told us that in order to be creative on a human level, we need freedom. And one of the reasons we're not free is we're all bottled up with anxieties, guilt, frustrations. And I believe just as obstructing is conformity, tradition, and pressures of society. But when God enters the life, he frees us from all of these. We are unconditionally loved and accepted by God. We are regarded as worthwhile. We are understood. We find our true selves because God lets us be ourselves. Yes, he reshapes and molds us. He chips away at the ugly parts of us and polishes and smooths out the good parts. And where we need some beautiful parts added, he adds them. Last year, I watched a drama more exciting than any movie I have ever seen. The setting is a broken home. The characters are a beautiful but deserted wife, four adorable children, a proud, handsome, Invictus husband. The plot, a hopeless, unhappy situation from the human point of view. But God, the Creator, entered this wife's life and made her a new creation. The image of God began to be formed in her. The self-pity she had felt turned to praise because she had found God through this. The bitterness that she had built up toward her husband turned to concern for him. Slowly, God was able to show her some of her attitudes that had caused her husband to leave in the first place. She began to be recreated in the image of God. Her new nature developed and was obvious to all of us, the whole neighborhood, and also her family and her husband who would come to visit the children. He fell in love with her again, and after a year of separation, they're back together. He has not given his life to God in the same way that she has, but she is praying and we are praying with her and believing that he will. This God is at work in us, changing us to be more like himself. And he's also at work outside us. God, the Creator, is able and wants to take the circumstances, difficulties, problems, events of life, and then use them to make us into strong, beautiful in spirit, contented women. Disillusionment in relationships that often cause cynicism or bitterness, God uses to create a spirit of forgiveness or tolerance or love. Heartache brought on by wayward children can cause a forlorn, dejected soul, or God can use it to make a more understanding, sympathetic, loving mother. Sorrow because of shattered dreams and hopes will develop into weariness, despair, and hopelessness, unless it is put into the hands of the divine Creator, who will use the same shattered dreams to give a greater vision. God, the divine Creator, can gather the fragments of a broken relationship between husband and wife and create an even more beautiful mosaic. God, the divine Creator, has the power to cause and effect the direst of circumstances to merge and become the most beautiful of summer skies after a storm. And ladies, we don't need to wait until sorrow hits our home or problems arise. We do not need to be despairing of life, wandering in the wilderness to need God. The best of us, the most intelligent, the most highly cultured, the most creative, she still falls short of the glory of God. This is from a divine point of view, and from the human point of view, she misses experiencing God's creative power in her life. Many of us here today have experienced God's creative power in our lives. We have literally felt his power carrying us through difficult circumstances. We have seen miracles as he changes impossible situations into joy. We have watched his tender hand cutting out pride and sin in us and felt the surge of peace and contentment as it fills the chasms left. We know the exhilaration of being set free and able to live creatively because of God entering our lives. Perhaps there are some of you here who have never experienced and known the presence of this great Creator. He is waiting to enter your life. As we close, let us be thinking and pray a phrase that is often used in the Catholic Mass. It is Veni Creator Spiritus. And this means, come, Spirit Creator.
Thank you for allowing us the privilege of ministering to you by way of this cassette. You can multiply this ministry by sharing this cassette with someone else.